tried to ban it.
Welcome back to the George Plaster Show.
He's a fine man.
He's a great broadcaster.
Brought to you by Fort Durham Injury Law. Call George now at 615-844-5600 and online at WNSR.com.
He's a very powerful guy.
And now, here's the man, the myth, the legend, George Plaster.
And welcome back in, 3 o'clock hour. It looks like we've got a little coaching news. Bruce Feldman reporting that FAU, now that they no longer have Lane Kiffin, they're going to turn to Willie Taggart. That looks like that's about to happen. Willie Taggart, ironically, has been rumored a couple of places down in Florida, and it looks like he is going to land at FAU. So, hold on to that one. Let's head down to Houston. We'll be joined by Aaron Wilson, who covers the Texans for the Houston Chronicle. Aaron, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. Listen, obviously a lot of excitement out of both cities about this game Sunday, Texans and Titans. The Titans have been consistently good for the last 4 to 6 weeks. The Texans have been more the schizo. When they're good, they're really good. And when they're not, they've been god-awful. Why do you think they're having such peaks and valleys?
Well, one of the problems they have, there's some fundamental flaws with this team, as talented as they are, that when they get exposed in a major way. And there's also a tendency to have a letdown after a good game. And that's more of an emotional, intangible thing that I don't even think they could define, other than just the obvious assumptions you make about a team that isn't consistent in terms of, and I don't even know if it has to do with effort. It's just more attitude. I think they always play hard, and I think they kept playing hard against Denver even after they got off to such a bad start. But, yeah, they have some sloppiness to them. They have some issues, and there's some problems, that includes their pass coverage, their lack of pass rush without J.J. Watt and after Jadeveon Clowney was traded. And on the other side of the football, you have an offensive line that has a guy that Laramie Tunsil, very talented, but he leads the NFL in penalties, and he has 12 false starts. And he says that they're picking on him. I do not understand that. I don't think they pick on anyone in the NFL when it comes to that infraction. It's just either you jump or you don't. But, you look at this team, they could beat anybody. I mean, they just beat the defending Super Bowl champion Patriots, but then to lose to Denver the way they did, it seems to me like they overlooked them, and some players even admitted that it was a trap game and that they fell into that trap, and that's a problem. But it wouldn't surprise me if they played very well on Sunday, or if they just aren't, as good as the Titans, and, they come up short. It's just a team that's confusing, and typically when you have these kind of issues, it's not a team that just sort of defies these expectations, and all of a sudden they get it together. Typically there's something wrong with, the operation, and you come up short. Maybe they're going to be a team that makes the playoffs, but I don't think anyone around here right now thinks they're going to be very relevant in the postseason, if they make it even. They've got some work to do to get to the postseason, and that starts Sunday against the Titans. And, I don't think they should be favored to win this game, and it'll be a very difficult game for them to win.
How much heat is Bill O'Brien catching for this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde?
How do you mean? You mean the media, the fans, the ownership?
The whole nine yards. Is he coming under a lot of fire for it?
I would say no. I would say it's considered sort of, you have a few fired up radio hosts, but I think it's considered sort of business as usual. If you look at the Texans and, the way they've been for the past few years, they're not a team that really, it's kind of a lukewarm deal. You still have people who get that fired up. They're an organization that hasn't been to a Super Bowl, that hasn't been to a championship game, and they've had a big shakeup in terms of how they run the organization, and some of the trades that Bill O'Brien oversaw have worked out really well, and So that created some optimism about the roster. But I think there's still a need of, you know, improved chemistry and continued development and coaching and adding some more pieces. There's been some injuries that I think are just so hard to come back from, like J.J. Watt or losing their really good rookie right tackle, Titus Howard, that they're not the same. You know, just, they're a team that I think operates on a smaller margin of error than people think. And as talented as they are with DeAndre Hopkins and Deshaun Watson and all these big stars, I just don't see a lot of depth.
Aaron, why did it – obviously you all know it because you talk it every day, but for people in Nashville that maybe don't follow it day to day, why did they feel the need to trade Jadeveon Clowney?
They felt like contractually they would never be able to have a good compromise on what he thought his value should be, which is in the Khalil Mack kind of territory, even though most people around the NFL objectively would tell you that his production doesn't suggest that kind of deal would be appropriate. And his best offer from them was 5 years and $75 million. And in retrospect, I think he should have taken it, but he probably thought he was going to be undercutting his value. And then it got into a situation where the general manager they had in the spring and last year, the one that assigned him the franchise tag, Brian Gain, he wanted him to play this year under the tag and then reevaluate whether they should tag him again, do a deal he wanted to use this year. And Bill O'Brien had reached the end of his patience with Jadeveon Clowney and moved on from him. But, yeah, Clowney, there's some things that in terms of work habits, kind of practice guy he was, that didn't match up with the great effort you see on game day, and that bothers coaches. And when you have a coach that's in charge as opposed to a general manager, they're more likely to make that kind of emotional decision and say, you know what, let's just get what we can out of it. But they waited too long, and his value went down, and then he refused to go to Miami. And when he wouldn't go to Miami, they found another trading partner. I think if they had been in a situation where they couldn't have worked out any kind of trade, it would have been very awkward with him. I don't think there were circumstances where he could have played based on some of the conversations that he and Bill O'Brien had had. That, you know, that one, to me, it got personal with those two guys. They just were like oil and water. They didn't mix.
Aaron Wilson is on the line with us, covers the Texans for the Houston Chronicle. Watson, what do you got for him?
Aaron, talk about Deshaun Watson and what he's meant. And I just think he's having a heck of a year. He doesn't have all the weapons that some of these other guys have, even though Hopkins is a strong weapon. But he's just, if they're winning games, to me, it's Deshaun making plays and just pulling them through. Just talk about him a little bit.
Well, he's the reason why that they're in every game. You can never say, well, they don't have a chance, because he's that good. He's not going to be winning the MVP or anything like that, but he is an extremely valuable commodity for this franchise, and he does it all. And not just running, but the way he throws the football, he's very accurate. He makes good decisions. He's a student of the game. He's an outstanding athlete. And he's also a leader. He works really hard. He's here all the time. He puts in a lot of hours. He has a lot of input into the play calling. They run some things that he did at Clemson that he likes very much. And I think there's really no offense that you could say, well, that's not his style. He can play in any style.
Yep.
He can beat you from the pocket. He can beat you on the perimeter. He can run the run-pass option very well. He can do the read option. And he can also just step back there in the shotgun and throw it. I feel like he's a young quarterback that, you know, he missed half his rookie year, so he didn't have a chance to expand on that as much as you would have liked as a rookie. But if you look at last season, the terrible offensive line, what he did, and what he's doing this year with a, you know, somewhat improved offensive line, he's got them in the conversation, and they're a team that I don't think people want to play in the playoffs because of him. And that's a testament to what he's all about. They're very fortunate they were able to trade up and get him. I think it was a grave mistake by the Chicago Bears to go with Mitch Trubisky instead of Deshaun. And yeah, this is, you know, if you talk about the Texans and things for them to be excited about, it's Watson. That's the guy.
How do you see they could use him, Aaron Moore, here in these last three games to get into the playoffs? What else can they do? Is there any other ways they can use him more? Do you think he needs to run it more or whatever? Because I think he is the answer to winning and losing in these next three games totally for them.
Right. I think he runs quite a bit. I mean, he had two touchdown runs last week. I'm not sure if they want his run attempts to go up much higher. There are some strong indicators that the run-pass option, that people kind of figured that out and blueprinted how to stop that or slow that down. We haven't seen that play as often. They did employ some of the Ravens techniques that they do with Lamar Jackson. There was a three tight end set where he threw out of that. I'd like to see that again. I thought that was a good play. They didn't. Sometimes I think people stop doing what's working. That was working against New England, and they didn't do it against Denver. But I think they've got to do anything they can to get him going, get him in a rhythm early. What they've got to do is score more in the first quarter. They only have 30 points. They are second to last in the NFL in first quarter scoring. The Redskins are last with 23 points. So they've got to get better. They need some better scripts for him. You think about what you want to improve in the last 3 weeks. They got to come up with some better opening game plans. And guys can't jump off sides. Laramie Tunsil, you know, they were in position to score, and then he jumps offside. He has stalled nine drives this year with his penalties.
Whoa. George?
Terry, what do you got for Aaron?
Aaron, good to talk to you again.
Hey, Terry.
I want to go back to a little bit of what George hit on about the Texans' inconsistency. And one of the beliefs that I've always had regarding the Texans, and tell me if you buy into this a little bit, is that this is a team that has as much star power as any team in the league, with J.J. Watt, Sean Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, Clowney up until this year. They had had Tyrann Mathieu in the past. You know, they always seem to have high-profile superstar players at a number of different positions. But it seems like that in some spots where they don't have a superstar, they're average to below average in terms of what they have. Like, the offensive line has been a problem for years. They've had some issues in the secondary. Do you think that contributes to some of this team's inconsistency, because teams exploit that?
Right. Yeah, Terry, you're hitting the nail right on the head, because they neglected the offensive line for too long, and then they try to fix it all at once this year, and it's almost like an emergency situation. When I look at their offensive line, and you go back and you look at the draft, so they drafted Dwayne Brown, former Pro Bowl left tackle, in the first round in 2008. Then they had a contract dispute with him, and he wasn't too happy with the organization, as he, you know, wanted to protest social issues. He didn't feel any support from them. He had some issues with Bob McNair. He called out the late Bob McNair, called him ignorant and things like that. So he got promptly traded to the Seahawks. Then they didn't draft another offensive lineman in the first round until this year, when they picked Titus Howard. You know what? A lot of people criticize them for them not picking Andre Dillard. I think Titus Howard's better. You know, he's a right tackle, but I think he's just a better overall lineman. And he showed me a lot as a run blocker. He showed me a lot of toughness this year. I think he's a good pick. But, yeah, Nick Martin, second rounder, he's playing a little bit better. But, yeah, Zach Fulton, nothing special at right guard. The guys that have replaced Titus Howard at right tackle, Chris Clark should be retired. He can't play anymore. Roderick Johnson's nothing special. Over to left guard, Max Sharping's got some upside. I think Tunsil, if he could fix his case of offsides, he's graded out really well for pass blocking. I think he's a, you know, good football player, but they did it all at once. And then you look at the secondary, they've tried to do some things. They had to swap out a lot of guys when they lose Tyrann Mathieu in free agency, and they bring in Tayshaun Gibson. Gibson's been fine. Justin Reed is a good pick, the third rounder from last year, and I think he's an excellent safety, but the cornerback position, they're just trying all at once, bringing in a bunch of waiver claims and trades of guys that failed elsewhere, like Vernon Hargraves and Kerryon Conley, and I don't know. I think it's just a lot of change all at once at two problem positions that are so pivotal to football, offensive line and secondary. And you can definitely say they still have some deficiencies. They're marginally improved, if at all.
And Aaron, how much, you know, when you look at you know, the Titans offense, obviously it's been humming along for the last month under Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry. How much are the Texans concerned that they're not going to be able to slow down this Titans offense, and that if they win on Sunday, that it's going to have to be a 41-38 type of game rather than a 24-21 type of game?
I think they have a fair amount of concern and respect. They definitely know that Corey Davis and A.J. Brown are excellent football players, and they did some scouting of A.J. They sent their receivers coach, John Perry, up to Ole Miss to scout A.J., work him out, along with D.J. Metcalf. And I think when you really look at what they've done, they've always had a pretty good offensive line. They've always had, you know, some pieces. What they didn't have was the quarterback. And this has been nothing short of miraculous to switch quarterbacks, and all of a sudden they're winning. And he's the reason why they're winning. He's played so well, and this is much better than he played for the Miami Dolphins. And I think, you know, I'm not around him like you guys are, but I'm assuming that he has matured and, you know, maybe been humbled a little bit by, you know, being traded and all those things. And I think that his attitude probably has a lot to do with how he's playing. But, yeah, the Texans have a lot of respect for him. Mike Vrabel's legit. This guy's a real leader. This guy, someone that was really respected and really important when he was here, even before he was defense coordinator, when he was just a linebacker's coach, because of who he is and credibility he has as a, you know, all-pro linebacker for the Patriots and all the Super Bowls they won when he was there. So, yeah, I think even if you go to personnel, like John Robinson, you know, not a lot of people talk about him around the NFL, but they should. He's a really, really good talent evaluator. He has a lot of friends here, like guys he worked with in New England, like James Lickford, that's their director of college scouting. And I think you look at the Titans, I think they're building it the right way. I think they're like the Colts, where you've got a strong general manager, you've got some guys that make good personnel decisions, and what they just didn't have was the quarterback, because Mariota, for whatever reason, just wasn't, you know, healthy enough and wasn't, I think, confident enough, wasn't good enough. But now it just shows the difference that a quarterback makes, and a guy that's very hungry to show what he can do. And obviously financially, that's probably going to lead to some really good things down the road for him, probably, you know, after this season, whether it's a franchise tag or a new contract. You know, obviously, you know, they should bring him back as their quarterback. And I think that's a kind of a no-duh type of statement. But, you know, they have, you know, some things they have to do contractually to make that happen, and I'm sure that they will. But, yeah, the Texans think highly of the Titans. This is a real rivalry, too. I think that it's a friendly rivalry in the sense that I don't think it's that chippy. You know, you had a few things with Clowney and some of their guys every now and then, but I don't know if it's a real spicy rivalry, but it's a respectful rivalry. I mean, I think the sting of them being the Oilers and all that stuff, I mean, that's for, like, much older fans from a different generation, the Love You Blue crew, but they've had their own team for quite a while here, and they've had some success, not a lot of success, but some success, and I think it just kind of stands on its own merit. But, yeah, the Titans, the way the Texans think of them, yeah, they have a lot of respect for them because, you know, why wouldn't you? I mean, they're a talented, really, you know, hard-nosed football team. And if you can't respect the way Derrick Henry runs, you know, you don't like football. I mean, guy's tough. They've done a good job against him. I wanted to see it without J.J. Watt, if they can do that again. I don't know. You know, this year it's like he won't be stopped, despite his hamstring.
Aaron, really appreciate your taking time to come on with us. Looking forward to Sunday. It ought to be a lot of fun, and thanks for the time that you've given us.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Aaron Wilson covers the Texans for the Houston Chronicle. We're going to go to the break at 3:22, and then we will open up the phones and take this wherever you may want to take it. You pick the topic. We'll get into it. By the way, let me also throw this out there. If any of you have a strong opinion about what to do with the college football playoff, whether you want it to go to 8 or 12 or 16 or whatever, feel free to use that as well as a topic you might want to get into. 844-5600 is the number. Again, 844-5600. 5600. We're back with more on WNSR, so stick around.
You wanted to see me?
Yes, please, have a seat. So here's the thing. When this company brought you on, we took a chance on you. You didn't have that four-year college degree we typically look for.
Right.
But we gave you a shot anyway. And since then, you've worked incredibly hard and given it your all.
Thanks.
You've been an important asset to the team, but I don't think you can be an intern here anymore. We want to hire you.
You're serious?
Absolutely.
Find your next great employee. Introduce yourself to the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
I won't let you down.
I know.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Thinking about buying a home or refinancing? Lori Burnett Leland at MortgageLadyUSA.com can help. Listen to what other folks are saying about their experience. John in Birmingham says, quote, Lori helped me walk through each stage of the loan process and ensured I was comfortable with every step we made. She shared her wealth of knowledge and fielded all of my questions regarding my very first home purchase. She's the best. With the power of USA Lending behind her, and over 50 different bank options, Lori Burnett Leland wants to be your mortgage lady. Call her today at 615-969-4350 or visit MortgageLadyUSA.com. Equal housing opportunity, One Vantage Way, Nashville, Tennessee, NMLS number 1088591 and 45370. Licensed in Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia.
What you reading?
It's called The Ledger. There's a great column on the Titans.
So it's a sports publication?
No, not just sports. Like, see here, there's a great cover story on why Middle Tennessee's real estate market is so hot. The Ledger has stories written by some of Nashville's best, most experienced journalists. And you can get all the information on the Mid-State's fast-growing restaurant scene. There's profiles of community leaders and data that helps generate leads for my business.
And sports?
Yes, including UT coverage from Knoxville.
Expensive?
Is free expensive?
Free, huh?
Yeah, grab you one at hundreds of locations and tnledger.com. It's The Ledger. Pick one up today.
Blair, what about my medical bills?
They'll all be taken care of through the settlement.
What about me?
You worry about getting better. Do what your doctor tells you. We'll take care of the rest.
What a relief.
Mark Durham, Injury Law, 615-242-9000.
Five-State Forecast. Your exclusive Nashville Sports Radio WNSR SkyCan Forecast. For this afternoon, sunny with a high near 46 with an east-southeast wind around 5 miles an hour. Tonight, clear with a low around 27 with calm winds becoming east-southeast around 5 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 54. Utilizing the resources of the Weatherbug Network on Nashville Sports Radio, I'm WNSR's Jeff DeWitt.
Sports Radio WNSR.
You're listening to the George Blaster Show on WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
Okay, we're going to go open phones here in just a minute. If you're out there and you're driving around and you've got something that's on your mind, we can get to you pretty quickly at 844-5600. In other words, I don't have any calls on there right now, so if you'll get in, we will get to you pretty quickly. I want to bring Terry into a conversation he didn't get to hear earlier. And go ahead, you all go ahead and hit the phones. Terry, we've now had a couple of commissioners come out and say college football playoff needs to be expanded, needs to be discussed. Jim Delaney today from the Big Ten being the most recent. In your crystal ball, what do you think's the best route to go?
Well, I think it probably the best route would be 8, but I think you may see a 6 before you see an 8. And a 6 would give the top 2 seeds a bye, and the other games would kind of be play-in games to go against those teams. I think it's probably still, you know, a lot of it's tied to the TV contract, and I would think that once that comes up for renegotiation, that's when you'd see the expansion probably.
I kind of think it's going to be earlier than that. I don't I think a lot of these conferences are unwilling to wait till something like 2026 when the TV contract expires, and that's why I think you're hearing all the rumbling.
If you were to expand to six or eight this year, who would you add as the additional team?
Well, let me say this, and I think both of you would agree. This is probably the first year where it was ironclad. There's no argument. Nobody's right. Saying, well, Baylor should have gotten in over Oklahoma, or Memphis should have gotten in over. This is really the first year that any moron could have gone in there on Sunday morning and said, okay, the big decision's LSU, Ohio State. We've got Clemson slotted at three. We now have Oklahoma slotted at four. But you know as well as I do, Terry, that most years, it's not that easy.
No, it's not. And, you know, and here's one of the things. Here's a point that I would make. I don't know if you guys talked about this earlier, but if I'm the non-Power 5 schools, if I'm the Memphises and the Boise States and Florida Atlantics or whatever of the world, if this thing expands, especially if it gets to eight teams, then I say we have to have at least one seat at the table. I think that would make things a little bit more interesting, because I think, you know, there were some people a couple of years ago that legitimately wanted to know if Central Florida could hang with the big boys. Now, I don't think that they could. I think they would have gotten trucked by Alabama or Clemson or some of the powerful teams like that. But I think a lot of people want to see if they can hang and if they have a legitimate claim that, you know, they're a top-flight program.
And I think Watson's right there with you. Watson, you kind of want to see that, don't you, where they at least are guaranteed one seat at the table?
Yes, I think that would be very fair. I think there needs to be stipulations, George. Maybe it's you're in the top 15 or you're in the top 20. You know, if you would like to think one of those schools or those five conferences would be. But I told you, we talked about this, Terry, while you weren't here, and I was a firm pusher for eight, and for sure not 16, and I wasn't for six. I don't like anybody getting buys and being fresh and getting that opportunity. I think everybody, when it starts, they ought to all have to play the same number of games. But that would be a way to get the group of five a representation in there. And it would also, with eight, Terry, what I said is it's going to get all the Power Fives a represent in there. This year, Oregon or Utah would have been in if there's eight, in my opinion. Alabama would have been in if there's eight. And then either Baylor or Wisconsin, one of those two would have probably been in if it's eight. So I think it would hit the conferences better. And I think that's what I told George, Terry. That's what I think the fuss is. All these different schools and these conferences are complaining we're not getting in. We're not getting represented. And then when you don't get in, it's really a downer to that conference. And I think that's what's going to put this thing over the hump in time.
Now, I don't know that this could actually happen. Maybe it could. Certainly it could. Suppose a three-loss team wins a conference and gets a bid in an expanded format, and then all of a sudden that team runs the table and wins the championship. Are people going to be up in arms if a Pac-12 champion that went, 9-3 and then won the conference championship game to clinch the automatic berth comes in as a number 7 or 8 seed and then runs the table? Are people going to be okay with that the same way that they are in the NCAA basketball tournament when a team that's 23-10 makes the Final Four?
Terry, let me start with that. That's a great question that you've posed, because one of the beauties of the NCAA basketball tournament is when it's over, nobody questions who the champion is. When Villanova beat Georgetown, it was just, you know what? God bless them. They pulled it off. They shot 79%, and they're our national champion. Watson, I think that's a great question. Would the public be as willing in a football playoff to just say whoever the winner is, God bless them, they're our champion.
Absolutely. And it's because of the NCAA basketball. If it's a tournament, and that's what this is, it's a four-team tournament now. It's a new season. And there's nobody that gets upset if the four right now beats the one for the national championship. You dang them right, they'll accept it because they earned it. It's not talked about through the media. It's not talked about through the fan base. Somebody won it. Somebody lost it. And that's the way I think America's built. Now, that sounds a little cliche-ish, I know, but I really believe it'd be a no-brainer. It would be more than accepted if the eighth seed, who's got three losses, wins the whole thing.
Okay, 844-5600 is our number. You all have been kind of quiet today. I know you're out there. You're driving around. You're listening. You've got a phone. I want you to legally pick whatever is on your mind, and let's get on with it. Jeff in Murfreesboro, welcome into WNSR.
What's going on, George? Y'all were talking about the basketball tournament and the fact that Washington said they'd accept it. I guess they would, too, but there was a podcast I listened to a while back, just bits and pieces of it. I know you've heard of Ryan Terrio, right, George?
Heard of who?
Ryan Terrio, you know, that baseball player.
Yeah, sure. Used to play for the Cubs.
We played at LSU in college, and he does a podcast. There's a station in Baton Rouge, and he was talking about it one week about, I guess it was football and everything in college, and he was talking about, he said that his comment about college football, he said that the college football regular season was the most useless thing he ever heard of, because he said the bowl system was antiquated and outdated. He said if college football started today, they wouldn't have no bowl system. And he said imagine if March Madness went away. He said, imagine if basketball had a bowl system like football does. Imagine if, like you had a, like, for example, if Kentucky played Michigan State in the blah, blah, blah bowl in Rupp Arena or blah, blah, wherever it's the arena you want to play it in, is what he said. And he said that all the other championships in the NCAA are sanctioned by the NCAA. When you get a trophy, it says NCAA National Champion on it. And all the other ones have a tournament. Like baseball, it's 64 teams.
Mm-hmm.
The ball is 64, such and such is that. You know, they have a tournament, not a four-team, which is called playoff, whatever you want to call it. That's what his argument was for football. And even he said the FCS figures it out. They've even got a playoff. 24 teams, they figured it out. And the FBS can't and all that stuff. But that was just kind of what I want to kick around. But I did want to say, too, George, I don't know if you've seen today, they awarded the Paul Horning Award, and Lynn Bowden Jr. won
that. I saw that. So, congratulations to him.
Most versatile player in college football, and also the Sports Illustrated named the All-American team today, and Lynn Bowden Jr. got first team for his all-purpose player, and Max Duffy got second team punter. But I didn't want to say this, George, that the coaches yesterday named the All-SEC team, and the second team punter is Max Duffy. He's a finalist for the Ray Guy Award, the best punter in America, and more than likely he's going to get that award. It's kind of oxymoron. He's second team punter. It'd be like Joe Burrow winning the Heisman, and the first team a quarterback in SEC be Tua instead of Joe Burrow.
Who ended up number one?
What's that now?
Who ended up number one in that deal?
A guy from Texas A&M, punter from Texas A&M.
Gotcha.
The guy that's what he's a finalist for. I think they're going to name it either maybe tonight or tomorrow night. They're going to name the winner of it. So I don't know, but just want to kick that around about the football playoffs. See what y'all thought about that.
Okay, thank you.
I'll hang up and listen. Have a good one, guys. Appreciate it.
Watson, let's start with you. As more and more players say, I'm not going to take the risk because I'm going into the draft, so I'm not going to play in the bowls. Do you ever see a day where this diminishes the bowls to a point where people consider doing away with that system?
Yep, I do. I think it diminished it last year. It's a tough call, George. I don't like it. We talked about this before, if you remember, way back, and I just don't like it. I don't think it's a good image. To me, I'd love to see these kids finish out with their university. There's a game left, and you play it out. But they also have every right with the money they're going to make, and I understand both sides of it. So I'm not. I just wish the kids wouldn't do it, and if I'm one of them, I probably would consider it. I don't know. But I do think it's already diminished some bowls. I haven't heard as much of it, George, this year as I've been here, and maybe it's still early and there hadn't been as many yet just say I'm not playing. But, yes, I think it will, and I just hope it doesn't get to that.
Wayne on line three, welcome into WNSR. What's going on?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, Wayne, if you're there, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Good afternoon. Hey, y'all were talking about kicking it up to 16 teams in the playoff. It's an easy solution, and Watson, I never heard it addressed. Just make the regular season 10 weeks or 10 games. You don't have to play 12 or 13 regular season games. That's a simple solution to expand the playoff system.
And you and I both know what the answer is going to be, Wayne, on the other side, is that the schools are not about to give up when a home game for a lot of the big schools is worth $5 to $8 million in gate receipts. You know as well as I do, they're not going to do that.
I don't know, man. If the TV packages and all that are lucrative enough, where they know that it's a break even or even make better on a 16-team playoff. I mean, look what it does for schools that gets in the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, they'd rather be in that than have another couple of home games.
Well, yeah, there's a difference. It's a 15,000-seat arena. It's a 60,000-seat football stadium.
I understand that in the numbers, but I still think that a bigger tournament or a bigger format like that, I mean, it's just going to drive the money up even more that these schools are going to get to be a part of that.
Wayne,
we act like there's not an answer to it. There's an answer now. Whether the university presidents would go for it is the other thing. But, yeah, there is an answer to expand their playoff bracket.
I'm going to let Watson dive into this. Wayne, thank you for the call.
All right.
That leaves a line open, by the way, 844-5600. Watson, have you ever heard, I mean, we've heard a lot of let's expand to 12 several years ago when we had been at 11 for a long time. Did you ever hear anybody say that's the wrong move, let's go back to 10?
I didn't hear go back to 10, but there were people that weren't for 12 at the time. Yes, that was discussed hard, and a lot of the 12 was to help some of the talk. One of the pluses for 12 was to help the FCS schools, and it would get them money, and it would give you an opportunity to play them. But, George, I'm not sure that part might be true, but I'm not sure it hadn't watered down the FBS schedule. By, you know, I mean, here's Alabama playing so-and-so right before Auburn and
Western
Auburn
Carolina
and Sanford right before Alabama. It's just a wasted weekend, to be very honest. And that's where, so again, you're hitting one of my pet peeves. The other one you've heard me talk about many times, in having some kind of spring game or some kind of game in the preseason that you play somebody right down the road. But if it just went back to 11 and then they expanded to 8, again, I'm not sure it would ever get to 16, but even if it just expands, the caller is right, George, in one way. If there's more games and the TV packages get bigger, you might make more than the $54 million that you're already being paid at the end of the year if you're in the SEC or whatever. And that might go to $60 million or whatever, and it would make up for that game. But you also got to think now that a lot of times that 12th game right now, George, for the Power Fives, they're the ones paying money. Now they get their season ticket base for more, but they're paying the money to bring somebody in to play them anyway. And that to me would simplify it. You could move it up a week, everything up a week, because you're playing one less game. And the playoffs could start a week earlier if they needed to, if you wanted the extra week to give the players time to heal before it starts. It might let the bowls back up. Like, we got people starting playing bowls, I think, next week, don't we?
Next Friday.
Yep. Yeah, and that would back that up a week. I don't know. I don't know that the 12th game, other than dollars, I don't know if the 12th game has really been a plus issue since it started.
Terry, there are three things in life that are certainties. What are they?
Death, taxes, and whatever the third one is.
UL Monroe will be playing at an SEC school near you.
George, one of the things that I kind of wanted to address in terms of Watson talking about the bowl system, and I agree it's certainly declining, doesn't have the luster that it did before the playoff system came into focus. But to me, I think the bowl system is going to die. It's going to be taken away, kicking and screaming, because I think I'll give you an example. Even though Alabama and LSU are in the same conference as Kentucky, South Carolina, and Mississippi State, their objectives for the season most of the time, if they're being really honest about it, are not the same.
They're totally
Alabama
different.
Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee wants to get back to that level. Auburn, those teams feel like that when their program's right, they have a legitimate chance to be in the playoff. But if you're at Kentucky or Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Mississippi State, some of the other schools in the SEC, going 7-5 or 8-4 and making a bowl game is a banner season for your program.
Yeah. Well said. Okay, we're going to go to the break at 3:45. 844-5600 is the number. Got a line open. We're back with more, so stick around.
Whether having heating concerns during the cold winter months or looking to cool off those hot summer days, nobody in Middle Tennessee is better equipped to serve your needs than Lanham's AC Service, your local Rude Pro partner. From heating and cooling issues to water heaters, you can count on Lanham's AC Service and Rude HVAC equipment with a system that fits your unique needs while doing it right the first time. Serving the area for over 30 years, owner Brian Eskew and his team are dedicated to providing the best possible solutions for your home or business while providing reliable and honest service for Nashville and Middle Tennessee. And they do it with the name brands like Rude you have come to trust. I should know, I have a new Rude in my house and have been a customer for almost a decade. And remember, financing is available and they service and repair all brands. So call today to schedule a service or maintenance call, 615-969-9065. That's 969-9065, or go to lanhamsacservice.com.
My buddy James Warren is with me in studio, class of 1977, Battleground Academy, and owner of Sir Speedy, now Sir Speedy Music City. I know you've changed the name, but the service continues to be terrific.
We are the same people that you've come to love, and that's Sir Speedy Berry Hill is now Sir Speedy Music City. We did that just to be a part of the community that we're in and show our love for Music City. Even though we go all over the Southeast, we do most of our business here, and we love this city.
Phone number and the website.
615-832-9511 or SirSpeedyMusicCity.com.
Who was the company that heard the ad?
Donut Distillery over in East Nashville heard the ad and said, if you know George, then we'll do business with you.
Boy, that is scary. But here's the bottom line. You go in and see them, and when you do, you tell them Plaid sent you.
Looking for future leaders we can trust and believe in? Look no further than the high school student athletes right here in Tennessee. High school sports teach young people how to be effective leaders. It begins by making their grades and being on time for practice. It includes learning to listen, following directions, accepting responsibility, being a good role model. And it's about respect for officials, opponents, the rules, and each other. The result? It transcends sports. It gives us hope for the future. High school sports. There's so much more than just a game. This message presented by the Tennessee Secondary School Athletic Association and the Tennessee Interscholastic Athletic Administrators Association.
Could you use a little extra money for the holidays?
Jackson Hewitt is ready to help. Whether you have unexpected expenses or last-minute gifts to buy, starting December 18th, come in and ask a Jackson Hewitt Tax Pro how you could get up to $500 fast with an early refund advanced 0% APR loan by MetaBank. All you need to get started is a pay stub or other proof of income. Find out how we can help you get money on a prepaid card fast before the holidays. Go to JacksonHewitt.com to learn more. That's JacksonHewitt.com. Terms apply.
This is the George Plaster Show. Call now, 844-5600 on WNSR Nashville Sports Radio.
.349, and we welcome all of you back. By the way, Johnny Ballpark Franks today at 4 o'clock, so do not go anywhere. Tony in Nolensville, what's shaking today?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hello, George. Hello, Terry. And hello, Watson.
Hello, Tony.
How are you? George, you know, a lot of this show today has been about money.
Imagine that.
Isn't that something? And let me ask you, George, when David Price is now being shot by the Red Sox, as we learned in the last hour, what is the purpose of Boston Red Sox signing him to that lucrative contract X number of years, what, 3 or 4 years ago? And now you're shopping a guy. I don't understand the fact of signing a big contract and you go out as a team to pursue this player and you sign him to this big contract X number of years and then you turn around and shop him after maybe half of the terms on that contract. That's question number one.
Okay.
And number two, Watson, I don't know, and George, you might have seen this, in the Tennessean today, they reported some the assistant coaches' salaries at some universities. Watson, the salary base is just getting unbelievable, and I want to get your take on that after I hang up and listen to y'all's comments. And George, number three, and Terry, you also chime in on this. In all of sports, guys, these numbers are just going up monetarily. It all comes back down to the fan. Everything's pushed back down to the fan. And it's to the point now where families cannot go hardly to these major sporting events unless they, as somebody said earlier, you've got to just flat save up and look at what's your priorities. If you want to go to a sporting event, they're just getting so high, and it's just off the charts with these dollar figures. And I just want to get y'all's take on each one of those three segments.
Okay.
And I'm going to hang
great
up.
Great questions.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. Terry, let's you and I do the David Price one, okay?
All right.
Because I believe, number one, that David Price, and I'm not – necessarily bothered that he did it, but he went after the top dollar. Okay? Sure. He went after a top dollar in Boston in a media that he knew before he ever got there was going to be a tough media to deal with. That's just the history of the whole Boston deal. But he made the decision to go top dollar. When, and don't get me wrong, I don't know what the difference is between settling for $165 million and settling for $220 million. Like all of you out there, I don't live in that world. But he decided to go after top dollar. So when I hear him complain about the Boston media, number one, I don't have as much sympathy for him as I should, because he knew going in what he was getting into. Now, the concept of these teams all of a sudden signing big money and then changing their tune 3 or 4 years later, let's be honest, Price probably has lost more off his fastball than the Red Sox analytics team could have conjured up. And so they're trying to figure out how can we get him off our payroll so that we can start to at least talk to Mookie Betts if we want him. The bottom line is, They're trying to figure out how to keep Mookie Betts, and they're trying to pawn Price off on somebody else, and I don't think it's going to work.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think, you know, lots of, like you said, lots of things change. And, you know, while David Price is still a very good pitcher, you know, he may not be the pitcher he was when the Red Sox signed him. And, you know, part of the problem is that when, and you know, and I'm, you know, unbiased enough to look at the whole Gerrit Cole situation and say that it'll be a miracle if he lives out the entire 9-year contract with the Yankees. You know, he may get to a point where there's diminishing returns on him as well. And that's, you know, the players, you know, the contracts are guaranteed. You know, baseball and basketball and, you know, those contracts are a lot more ironclad than football contracts. But what you run the risk of is being somebody that nobody wants if you don't live up to the contract, and then all of a sudden they're, you know, trading you to the Padres for a couple of minor league middle infielders just so that somebody will take your contract.
Now, see, what I think is going to happen there, the Red Sox want to see if they can pawn him off somewhere. I believe with the amount of money that's left on that contract, they're going to have to be willing to eat a considerable amount of it, which sort of
probably right.
Yeah, which sort of goes against what they're trying to achieve, because they're trying to figure out a way to keep Mookie Betts. Ironically, both of them, you know, live in our listening area.
Right. And yeah, to me, you know, the thing of it is, you know, you may have to, you know, I think the Yankees did this with a contract or two that, you know, where they didn't want the player anymore, so they had to kind of sweeten the pot by giving the team that was taking the contract off their hands, you know, a pretty decent prospect, maybe better than they wanted to, just to make that happen. You may give up the guy you don't want plus a decent prospect for somebody that's kind of a marginal player just to get that contract off your books so that you can take care of somebody else. Because, you know, for whatever reason, even the big market teams now seem deathly afraid of the luxury tax.
Terry, as we have this conversation, I have this mental picture of B.J. Upton, who Frank Wren overpaid, gave him 5 years, $75 million, and when he started hitting 180, suddenly he wasn't worth having around. The Braves wanted his contract out of their hair so badly that they said to the Padres, if you will take this guy off our hands, we'll just sort of throw in Craig Kimbrell. Oops. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Watson, he had a good one for you. Let's hear it.
Which one? He had a couple.
Question number two was definitely yours.
And? What was it?
Does anybody in the room remember question number two? Anyone?
Was it he was talking about the assistant, one of the ones.
Oh, the assistants, yeah.
You want to go there?
Yeah, and okay, how much they're now making.
Yeah, and it's a trickle-down. What happens, and this is why you're hearing the players complain so much now, is first, you saw where I don't know who was in the paper, but I've seen through different things I've read, and I think they had Ole Miss coaches' salaries on there. And, you know, one's making over $1 million, another $900,000. It got down to $300,000, $400,000. All the salaries are much higher than they were back when I was an assistant in the SEC, George, and Big 12 and all of that. And what's happening is, the school is making so much money. Let's say that Ole Miss brought in $54 million from the SEC last year. And so here you go. You pay your head coach. You start playing your assistants. And then you want to – then the players say, well, we deserve some of that. And this is – money is a two-way street. It's great, but it can create a lot of issues. And I do think Tony is right. The fan starts paying for it in a lot of ways, through professional sports or the college sports. Now the price to go gets higher. The concessions, the parking, everything gets higher. You want to travel with your team to one of these Final Fours. Gosh, the money that you spend to do that, we talked about that, George, earlier.
Right.
And money just creates a lot of issues. And now we're seeing you don't just pay off your coach, you're having to pay off assistants. I saw in that Ole Miss thing there were a lot of assistants that had more than 1 year on a contract. Mm-hmm. It was like 2 or 3 years on a contract left that they were going to have to pay those guys. So it can bite you in a lot of ways. We're talking about Vanderbilt right now. Is Vanderbilt willing to go spend the money to keep up with the Joneses in the SEC? These are some of the things that we've been talking about. It's not just facility now, George. There's a lot of things that could be upgraded to catch up with the Alabamas of the world. And are they willing to do that? It's getting out of sight. I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing the fan base go down. All the money is being made, George, through television. It's television money. Well, it's also driving fans from the stadiums.
Yep.
They're watching these games on TV. They're not coming to the games. So the prices are getting higher to try to make the same amount of money with less people coming. And that's going to end up driving more of them away from the games.
Watson, I got to stop you. We're out of time.
Okay.
But all of you take this thought away from today's show. The concessions in your refrigerator are cheaper than what you pay at the ballpark. Speaking of ballpark, Johnny Franks is next.